This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details. And now we enlighten you with verses 162 to 165 of chapter Al-An'am from the Holy Quran, recited by Murtaza Fatimi.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. قل إن صلاتي ونسكي ومحياي ومماتي لله رب العالمين لا شريك له وبذلك أمرت وأنا أول المسلمين قل أغير الله أبغي ربا وهو رب كل شيء ولا تكسب كل نفس إلا عليها ولا تزر وازرة وزر أخرى ثم إلى ربكم مرجعكم فينبئكم بما كنتم فيه تختلفون وهو الذي جعلكم خلائف الأرض ورفع بعضكم فوق بعض درجات ليبلوكم فيما آتاكم إن ربك الله وإنه لغفور رحيم صدق الله العلي العظيم.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Say, surely my prayer and my sacrifice and my life and my death are all for Allah, the Lord of the worlds. No associate has He, and this am I commanded, and I am the first of those who submit. Say, what shall I seek, a Lord other than Allah? And He is the Lord of all things. And no soul earns evil but against itself, and no bearer of burden shall bear the burden of another. Then to your Lord is your return, so He will inform you of that in which you differed. And He it is who has made you successors in the land, and raised some of you above others by various grades, that He might try you by what He has given you. Surely, your Lord is quick to requite evil, and He is most surely the forgiving, the merciful.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Headlines: Tehran and Moscow both reject allegations of Russia using Iranian drones in the war against Ukraine. Iran's foreign minister says the US sanctions are violating human rights by blocking direly needed medical supplies to hundreds of EB patients. Also ahead, the Federal Reserve says the US economic outlook is becoming more pessimistic due to high inflation and rising interest rates. Welcome to World, the news from the Iranian capital, Tehran. Our top story this hour: Tehran has once again denied Kiev's claims about supplying Russia with drones to be used in its war against Ukraine. Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdullahian said military cooperation between Tehran and Moscow dates back to many years ago, but Iran has not supported Russia's war against Ukraine. The top diplomat said Tehran is strongly against the war and arming of the two sides in the Ukraine war. He said Tehran has asked the Ukrainian officials to provide any evidence they have regarding the use of Iranian drones in the war against their country. Amir Abdullahian made the comments in a phone conversation with his Croatian counterpart, Gordon Grlić-Radman. Russia, meanwhile, denies Western claims that Iran supplied it with drones to use in the Ukraine war, warning the UN against conducting a probe into such claims. Addressing a UN Security Council session, Russia's deputy UN ambassador described such allegations as, quote, baseless accusations and conspiracy theories. Dmitry Polyansky said the drones used by the Russian army in Ukraine are manufactured in Russia. He added that any UN probe into the origin of the drones was absolutely unprofessional and political. Polyansky warned Russia would reassess cooperation with the UN chief Antonio Guterres if he went ahead with the probe. The Iranian UN envoy also rejected Western claims on Iran's drones as, quote, unfounded and unsubstantiated. Western countries argue that Iran selling drones to Russia violates UN Security Council Resolution 2231. The resolution's ban on Iran's conventional arms sales expired in 2020. Here's our correspondent in eastern Ukraine, Johnny Miller, with more on this latest controversy about the alleged use of Iranian drones.
Well, this story has been increasing, if you like, for a few weeks now, with Ukraine making these allegations, but it's all come to a head with these massive drone strikes by Russia on the capital, Kiev, targeting energy infrastructure. Ukraine and some NATO countries say that Iran is supplying these weapons. Iran and Russia deny it. There's also an alternative theory that Iran is giving the technology for Russia to use these drones. Interesting piece in The Guardian newspaper today suggesting that Ukraine is expending more weaponry in terms of costs in attempts to shoot down these drones than they actually cost. These drones, of course, are very cheap to manufacture. And there's also a bit of a propaganda war in terms of just how many of these drones are being shot down. Ukraine and NATO claims that a lot of these drones are being shot down, while Russia says that they are hitting their targets every day. What is clear is that Ukraine admits around 40% of its energy supplies, energy infrastructure has already been destroyed in Ukraine, with people now stocking up on lanterns and candles.
The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, says his country has always stood up against the West's propaganda and will never give in to such a campaign. Ayatollah Khamenei made the remarks in a meeting with hundreds of young Iranian elites and those excelling in scientific fields. He rejected as wrong and unrealistic the notion that the Islamic Republic is on the verge of collapse. Ayatollah Khamenei said the enemies have been engaged in such negative campaigns for the past four decades, but Iran's stability and the continuity of its revolution have proved them wrong. He also referred to the role of universities in thwarting the plots of the arrogant powers. Ayatollah Khamenei was referring to the recent riots that spread to some universities, where lecturers and students were pushed not to attend their classes. The riots began following the death of a young woman in hospital days after she collapsed at a police station last month. A forensic investigation dismissed the allegations that she was beaten and attributed her death to an underlying medical condition. Now, Iran's foreign minister says sanctions have become a modern tool for the U.S. to violate human rights. He made the statement during a visit to Iran's EB House, an NGO which supports patients with rare skin disorders. Saman Khajouri reports.
Iran's foreign minister, Amir Abdullahian, has paid a visit to EB House, an NGO supporting patients suffering from a rare skin disorder that causes the skin to become fragile, known as epidermolysis bullosa. During the visit, which came on the occasion of the EB Awareness Week, Iran's top diplomats said imposing unilateral sanctions have become a modern tool for the U.S. to violate human rights.
Imposing unilateral sanctions have become a modern tool for the U.S. to violate human rights. There are 1,300 EB patients in Iran, but Sweden refuses to give special bandages to these patients. This comes as Westerners have repeatedly declared that sanctions do not include patients and medicine, but in practice, they act the opposite.
The Swedish company Mölnlycke Healthcare has refused to sell Iranian EB patients medical care items they needed, including Mepilex dressings. Several children in Iran who suffered from epidermolysis bullosa lost their lives due to the lack of urgently needed medical equipment, and some others were hurt by severe physical injuries, including amputation.
Iran has serious problems in procuring wound dressings for EB patients. These dressings are produced in Sweden, but the country refrains from providing us with the bandages because of the U.S. sanctions. Our center has filed a lawsuit in the judiciary of the Islamic Republic to pursue the problem, and we expect the Foreign Ministry and the administration of President Raisi to follow up the case, because the lives of my daughter and other patients are in danger.
Many human rights groups have criticized the U.S. for cutting off banking ties with Iran through threatening international banks with punitive fines by the U.S. Department of Treasury, which has resulted in cutting Iranian patients' access to necessary medical items. Tens of Iranian EB patients, mostly children, have died since Swedish company Mölnlycke stopped selling its dressings to Iran. Since then, for EB survivors, the pain has increased by 70%.
Iran says the West is taking revenge on Iranians by waging a campaign of genocide against patients, believing that the sanctions have become the backbone of the so-called American human rights regulations. Saman Kujuri, Tehran.
A new report by the U.S. Central Bank says the country's economic prospects are becoming, quote, more pessimistic. The Federal Reserve says economic activity has slowed down and demand is weak due to rising interest rates, high inflation and supply disruptions. The Fed added that recession fears have also spread in several districts. The Federal Reserve has already raised interest rates five times since March to tame inflation and avoid a possible recession. The bank says more interest rate hikes are on the way. U.S. inflation has reached a 40-year high of more than 8%. Households are grappling with a soaring cost of living worsened by supply chain problems and skyrocketing energy prices due to the war in Ukraine. New election polling from the United States indicates that a major shift against the Democratic Party has taken place. Many say that a divided Congress now appears to be a certainty, while others note that Western polling has been repeatedly off the mark in recent years. Rami Mazahari has more from Chicago.
New polls are showing that the Democratic Party has lost significant momentum less than 3 weeks before the United States goes to vote in midterm legislative elections. The last month has seen a 5-point shift overall in favor of the Republican Party. That is fueled by a whopping 13-point shift among independent voters who now comprise the largest unofficial political party. Record inflation, long-term recession, a costly hardline approach to the unrest in Ukraine, dissatisfaction with the results of the so-called blue wave of 2020. Many are trying to pinpoint the reason for the recent drop for Democrats.
It's mostly the economy. I think inflation, especially price of food and price of fuel, are things that Americans experience every day. So aside from the broader trends, that's something that's hard for the Democrats to overcome.
Other new surveys confirm the dip in Democratic support. President Joe Biden has become so unpopular that he would now lose to Donald Trump in a head-to-head matchup. Two-thirds of the country thinks America is on the wrong track, which is almost a record high. The turnout rate of Republican voters is polling to run 4 points higher than the turnout by perhaps disillusioned Democratic voters. However, Western polling agencies have been continually off the mark in recent years.
Oh, I think polls are always unreliable. I think people, people can change their mind based on so many things. I mean, it's easy to get people emotional that way, to say, well, the polls are going this way or the polls are going that way. But again, it's like, that doesn't matter to me. I know what matters to me, and it's not polls.
The shift seems to ensure that Republicans will gain the majority of the lower house of Congress, while control of the upper house remains too close to call. With a Democratic president, that would translate into a divided government and in a country where political divisions have exploded and hardened.
The biggest issue may not be the polls or even the results, but if candidates on both sides refuse to accept the results. Many wonder if the disputed 2016 and 2020 votes have permanently ingrained the idea that American elections are illegitimate. Ramin Mazahari, Chicago.
A 16-year-old Palestinian has succumbed to injuries he sustained earlier in Israeli regime attack in the occupied West Bank. That adds to the already over 120 Palestinians that have been murdered by Israeli regime troops in the West Bank in the face of uprising that we're seeing there. That's escalation is also linked to our next story, which last night another deadly confrontation took place in the occupied West Bank. Israeli soldiers gunned down a Palestinian man. Let's cross over to occupied Ramallah and ask our correspondent Monica Andil to tell us what exactly triggered the violence on for this case?
We have to comment, as you have mentioned, to this urgent news. Mohammed Fadi Nouri, 16-year-old Palestinian, succumbed to his injuries that he sustained last month near the illegal settlement of Beit Il and the illegal, of course, military checkpoint of Beit Il. What happened last night is that Palestinian young man, Uday Al-Tamimi, 22-year-old from the Shafat refugee camp, was killed by the Israeli forces. The story of Uday Al-Tamimi is that 10 days ago, exactly on the 10th of October, Uday Al-Tamimi arrived at the illegal Israeli military checkpoint that was established at the entrance to Shafat refugee camp, the hometown of Uday Al-Tamimi. He left a vehicle, opened fire at Israeli soldiers there, killed an Israeli soldier and wounded the three others. Then the manhunt for Uday Al-Tamimi was going on since the 10th of October. All entrances to Shafat refugee camp, Anata town, and Al-Salam neighborhood in Al-Quds were completely sealed. Palestinians were not allowed to leave or enter the Shafat refugee camp. What happened last night is, again, Uday Al-Tamimi arrived at the illegal settlement of Ma'ane Adumim near Al-Quds, near Al-Izariyya town, and he clashed, confronted the Israeli forces. There were footage showing Uday Al-Tamimi holding a gun and opening fire at the Israeli soldiers post at the entrance of the illegal settlement, and the Israeli forces returning back fire. He was seen on the ground continuing to shoot at the Israeli forces, but then the Israeli military declared that they succeeded to shot dead Uday Al-Tamimi after a manhunt that continued for 10 days. Today in the occupied West Bank, a general strike has been declared in Al-Quds and all over the occupied West Bank. All schools had been closed, no businesses. Palestinians are saying this is the least to offer this Palestinian fighter who caused, let's say, the Israeli forces a state of war in the last 10 days.
Right. So in essence, Mona, this Uday Tamimi, another Palestinian committing a legitimate act of resistance against the brutal barbaric Zionist Israeli military occupation of the West Bank, is he related to the activist, the young lady Ahad Al-Tamimi?
Well, no. Ahad Al-Tamimi is from the occupied West Bank village of Al-Nabi Saleh. Uday Al-Tamimi is from Shafat refugee camp in Al-Quds and not the occupied West Bank. But at the end of the day, we have to say that all the Palestinians are one family in facing the Israeli brutality, the Israeli occupation, because Uday Al-Tamimi was killed in Al-Quds, and he's originally from Al-Quds, but the whole Palestinian territories in the occupied West Bank, in Al-Quds, and even in the Gaza Strip, I knew that a general strike or a state of mourning was declared in support of the Palestinians and to tell the Israeli regime and the Israeli military that today all Palestinians are one. They have left no option but to continue to be adherent to the choice of resistance.
Now, Australia has reversed its recognition of West Al-Quds as the capital of Israel, saying its embassy will remain in Tel Aviv. Canberra expressed its regret about the decision made by the previous administration, calling it political. Australia was one of the few countries with an embassy in occupied Al-Quds. Well, that brings an end to our bulletin for this hour. Thank you for staying tuned. Thank you.
what you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Supplication on Thursdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who has taken away the shadowy night by His power and brought the sight-giving day through His mercy. He has clothed me in its brightness and given me its favor. O Allah, just as Thou hast spared me for this day, so also spare me for its likes. Bless the Prophet Muhammad and his household, and torment me not in it and in other nights and days by allowing me to commit unlawful acts and to clothe myself in sins. Provide me with its good, the good of all within it, and the good of everything after it, and turn away from me its evil, the evil of all within it, and the evil of everything after it. O Allah, by the protective compact of Islam, I seek mediation with Thee, and by the inviolability of the Quran, I rely upon Thee. By Muhammad, the Chosen, Allah bless him and his household, I seek intercession with Thee, so recognize my protective compact, by which I hope my need will be granted. O most merciful of the merciful, O Allah, decree for me on Thursday 5 things, which none embraces but Thy generosity, and none supports but Thy favors. Health through which I may have the strength to obey Thee. Worship by which I may deserve Thy plentiful reward. Plenty in my state through lawful provision. And that Thou makest me secure in the places of fear through Thy security. And placest me in Thy fortress against the striking of worries and sorrows. Bless Muhammad and his household. And make my seeking his mediation as an intercessor give profit on the day of resurrection. Surely, Thou art the most merciful of the merciful.
In the limelight.
A dark, cold winter awaits Britain with strikes and chaos in major city centres as the new Prime Minister Liz Truss is unable to rein in the economic crisis. Even experts have warned that Truss is about to collapse under the dead weights of the British economy. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. Crescent International Road, British Prime Minister Liz Truss's shoulders are too fragile to carry the weight of a sagging British economy. The pound sterling is sinking vis-à-vis the US dollar and may fall even lower against the greenback. Truss, however, is the architect of her own misfortune. Raw ambition blinded her to the reality that Britain is not only sick, but on its deathbed. Within a month of becoming Prime Minister, and after a grueling leadership contest in which she scrapped past Rishi Sunak, the Indian origin, wunderkind of finance, reality has caught up with her. Truss does not have the competence to turn the British economy around. Being a female does not give her any advantage either. Truss dumped her finance minister Kwasi Kwarteng on October 14th, even though he followed her advice on cutting taxes to revive the economy. She essentially shifted blame for her policy to the ousted finance minister. In his resignation letter, Kwarteng said Britain faces an incredibly difficult situation and following the status quo was not an option. As I have said many times in the past weeks, following the status quo was simply not an option, he wrote. For too long, this country has been dogged by low growth rates and high taxation. That must still change if this country is to succeed. While Britain has been sliding into economic oblivion, it has been hastened by the sanctions imposed on Russia. Two of Britain's leading newspapers coming from the right and left, the Sunday Telegraph and the Guardian, gave similar prognosis for what ails Britain. Sanctions against Russia have led to rising prices, especially fuel price. Soon after the crisis in Eastern Europe on February 24th, and the West imposed sanctions on Russia, The Guardian wrote, the shock waves from the Russia-Ukraine crisis will cut UK living standards by £2,500 per household, lead to more persistent inflationary pressure, and slow the economy to a standstill next year, economists fear. Market confidence has crashed, and with the pound sterling in free fall, the Bank of England has had to intervene to raise interest rates faster than planned. This has caused a surge in mortgage rates, causing more pain for ordinary people. The British economy is held hostage to the interest of international bankers and investment managers. They insist on their interest being protected. They do not care what happens to the people. Most people's standard of living has fallen drastically. It has been underway for decades, but recent developments have hastened the fall. There is talk of a palace coup to replace Truss with Rishi Sunak. Will he be able to rescue Britain's economy? It seems highly unlikely. There are deep structural problems in the British economy. Discontent is bound to spill over into the streets and may even lead to violence. A dark, cold winter awaits Britain, as indeed in much of Europe, that will be punctuated by strikes and chaos in major urban centres. Welcome to Britain's status as a third world country. This is the price of following Uncle Sam, who is prepared to fight Russia to the last Ukrainian. The price for this folly has to be paid by the Europeans while the US sits safely across the pond. According to the website of Euractiv, UK Prime Minister Liz Truss's month-old government is on the brink of collapse after she engineered another humiliating U-turn on planned tax cuts and sacked her finance minister, who was responsible for the proposals. On Friday, October 14th, Truss sacked Chancellor Kwasi Kwarteng himself only in post for 38 days, and his deputy Chris Philip was also moved out of the Treasury. Former Health and Foreign Affairs Minister Jeremy Hunt, who served in former Conservative Prime Minister David Cameron and Theresa May's administrations, takes over the Treasury portfolio. "You have asked me to stand aside as Chancellor, and I have accepted," said Kwarteng in a letter posted on Twitter. Kwarteng had been in Washington until last night at the International Monetary Fund Summit. However, the crisis leaves the UK's Prime Minister, who took over from Boris Johnson less than 6 weeks ago, under pressure from her Conservative Party. Senior figures are already drawing up plans to replace her in 10 Downing Street. 2 weeks ago, Kwarteng announced a mini-budget with plans to cut income tax across the board to stimulate the UK economy and keep it out of recession. However, the £45 billion giveaway, which followed the announcement of a programme of over £100 billion of state subsidies to help businesses and consumers pay sharply rising heating bills, was not accompanied by any economic forecast or plans to cut public spending, prompting a market run on the pound and UK government bonds. Truss has since ruled out any public spending cuts. Earlier this week, interest rates on 10-year UK government bonds reached 4.6%, having been below 2% for over a decade until the start of 2022. Analysts also expect the pound to fall to parity with the US dollar before the end of the year. In a press statement, the embattled Prime Minister abandoned plans to cut corporation tax from 25% to 19%. Last week, her plan to cut the top 45% income tax rate was also scrapped, following criticism from the International Monetary Fund, which urged Truss government to rebalance its fiscal plans to help the UK's poorest. The IMF has warned that the UK economy will grow by 0.3% next year against a backdrop of interest rates of between 5% and 6% and inflation at 9%. The latest political crisis in London does, however, serve as a cautionary tale to EU governments as treasuries across the bloc draw up their own plans to support individuals and businesses during the cost of living crisis, which Russia-Ukraine crisis has exacerbated. Last week, Germany's plan for a 200 billion euros aid package for its businesses and households met with an angry reaction from ministers from France, Italy and Spain, who warned that a series of national approaches would risk the fragmentation of the eurozone and increase the gap between rich and poor EU states.
IRIB English Radio.
please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Turkmans in Iran. Years have passed since the day Agha Mohammad Khan Qajar designated Tehran as the capital of Iran. During the past 251 years, the population of the city has grown day by day. Besides me, there are 12,399,999 other people who reside in Tehran. For various reasons, Tehran has been the destination for many migrating ethnicities in different eras: Turks, Lors, Kurds, Baluchis, Arabs, Fars, Shias, Sunnis, Jews, Armenians, Zoroastrians, and in short, hundreds of customs and traditions and millions of views are living side by side in this metropolitan city of 13 million people. The interesting thing is these ethnicities still have their own traditions even after so many years of living in Tehran. For example, the Turkmens, they've been seen on many occasions in different parts of the city. They resemble the people in East Asia, and their special costumes have always caught my attention. I wonder how they've managed to preserve their own authenticity among the myriad of different styles, or how they've managed to adapt themselves with this society, with this cultural and political structure, where they are considered a minority group. After the Safavid dynasty was toppled, Turkmens migrated to the lush green regions in northeastern Iran and settled down near Gorgan. The Turkmens were mostly nomads and would migrate to different parts in different seasons, but as time went by, they chose a different lifestyle, sedentism. The main population of Turkmens is concentrated in Turkmenistan, but you can find other clans of Turkmens in other countries like Iran, Iraq, Afghanistan, and Syria. The Turkmens in Iran are divided in three main clans, namely the Tekkes, the Gukhlans, and Yomuts. Each of these clans is comprised of different ethnicities. The population of Turkmens in Iran is about 2 million people. Many big cities are known for the people in the world with symbols. For example, the Eiffel Tower in Paris, France, or the Statue of Liberty in New York, the U.S., or Burj Al Arab in Dubai, or our own Siyosipol in Isfahan. And this is Gumbad. Gumbad is a 60-meter tower made with bricks. For the existence of the very tower, the city was named Gumbad Kavus. The majority of the people in the city are Sunni Muslims and Turkmens. Color, color, and yet more color. It seems the people here love colors. You can see any color you've seen in nature on the clothes of the Turkmen people. Red, green, yellow, blue. Thanks to the colors, people look fresh. Wherever in the city I went, I only saw the smiles on the people's faces. The Turkmens who follow Hanafism as their faith do not usually save their money. The important thing for them is to live a better life and enjoy the money they earn. They take advantage of the smallest opportunities to be happy. They're very friendly and real believers. When it comes to religious obligations, they're very committed people. Almost all Turkmens in Iran are Hanafis. Hanafism is one of the branches of Sunniism in Islam. The denomination has the largest number of followers among the four sects of Sunnis. Anyone can easily find these facts on the internet. I was looking for something else. I was looking for life. I really wanted to know how the Hanafis in northeastern Iran, or I better say the Turkmens, live. How did they manage to fend for themselves in Iran, where the majority of people are Shias? That's why I traveled to Gonbad Kavus and the adjacent cities several times. I got to know many people. One of those people was Mr. Niazi. He became the subject of my documentary. I'll start with my latest trip in March, when Mr. Niazi had just come back from the Hajj pilgrimage. As the Hanafi Turkmens are considered a minority in Iran, the Shias residing in this region are also considered a minority. But the Shia and Sunni Turkmens have managed to come up with a rule after years of coexistence, and that is respecting one another's beliefs. For example, here. This place is Imamzadeh Yahya's shrine. Imamzadeh Yahya was one of the descendants of Imam Ali. It is a pilgrimage site for the Shia minority in Gonbad Kavus, but it doesn't seem that it makes that much difference for the people in this region. I mean, the Shias and Sunnis stand behind the Zari, that's the lattice structure, in the shrine and ask the Imamzadeh to fulfill their wishes. In my last trip to the northeast of Iran, Mr. Niazi and I went somewhere that was really interesting to me, the Qalicheshan Seminary School. It's about 80 kilometers away from Gonbad Kavus. When I looked at the structure from a distance, it didn't seem to be something new for me. I had already seen similar structures in other parts of Iran, but there were two things that were very interesting. First, in most of the villages around Gonbad, there are similar mansions that are considered seminary schools in the villages. Secondly, the numbers and figures used in the structure. Every brick in this seminary school is laid based on some principles and accurate calculations. There are four minarets that are built to represent the four Sunni caliphs. There are 23 chambers that stand for the 23 years that it took for the Quran to be revealed. Each chamber has 6,236 bricks representing the 6,236 holy verses of the Holy Quran. To reach the Grand Master's office, you have to go up 12 steps. The 12 steps are built with the 12 Shia Imams in mind. The mansion was constructed about 150 years ago by Mr. Qalicheshan, an outstanding Sunni figure back then. In his trip to Mecca, Felice Shahin was respected by the Ottoman government. The Ottoman ruler, as a respect for the Sunnis in the neighboring Shia country, offered him help. Felice Shahin brought some architects to the region and paid the expenses for the construction of the mansion with the help of the Ottoman government in order to promote the Sunnis. A few years ago, a grand mosque was built next to the Felice Shahin Seminary School. The mosque's capacity is more than the population of the village. A few kilometers away from the Felice Shahin building, there is a city called Kalaleh. It has a seminary school as well. Quran recitation competitions are held on a monthly basis in this seminary. Every month, many Turkmen participants come here to take part in the competition and be judged by the Sunni masters. Mr. Niazi told me that many Quran reciters and memorizers find their ways to the national competitions through the competitions that are held rotationally every month in different parts of the regions. But as for the Turkman's livelihood, as I said, I went to one of the successful Turkman people, I mean Mr. Behruz Niazi. Mr. Behruz Niazi, unlike his family name, meaning a person who is in need, thanks to his years-long hard work and thank God, does not need worldly assets. He is one of the successful citizens of this city, Gonbat Kavus. He has three children, and during the couple of days I stayed with them, I realized that he cares a lot about his family and loves them tremendously. Iranians have some traditions. It has a special place among all of them, and it's really important to observe them, like respecting their elders, especially their parents, or observing the Nowruz traditions or religious ceremonies or traveling. Turkmans are no exception. They love to travel. If the travel is to God's house, it is of utmost significance. This is Mr. Niazi, the senior, the elder in the Niazi family. He's Behruz Niazi's father. When a Turkman goes back home from the Hajj pilgrimage, the relatives hold a ceremony that is very interesting. They shower the Hajj pilgrims with nokh candles and cash, just like a bride and groom. They welcome them warmly. Afterwards, the Haji gives the guests some water from the Zamzam well as a holy souvenir. They stand facing towards the Qibla in Mecca and make a wish and drink the water so they become blessed with the water from the Zamzam and their wishes will be fulfilled. In small and large cities, there must be some places to shore up the economy of the region. This is the beating heart of Gonbat Kavus's economy, an industrial township with 50 factories and workshops and 1,200 people who put food on the table while working in this place. In northeastern Iran, there are three dairy product factories that are modernized and facilitated with modern equipment. One of the factories belongs to Mr. Niazi that is located in the industrial township. 250 people directly work in it. The capacity of the factory is about 100 tons of milk per day. The products are loaded onto about 60 trucks on a daily basis. In all mythical stories we've heard since we were children and have passed on from generation to generation until today, there's always been a champion, or I'd better say, a hero, who's risen up to defend the oppressed people and save them from the tyranny of an oppressive ruler. Besides their swords and shields, the heroes had something else that was among the main characters in the stories. I mean, a horse. This spacious stable belongs to Mr. Niazi, where about 30 horses are kept, horses of renowned and good breed. Most of them are Turkmen. For example, Cobra, who's now become a little old. Some years ago, Cobra was among the winners of horse racing. Keeping these horses costs a lot, as well as purchasing them. They're bought at exorbitant prices. For example, this Australian giant. I didn't even dare get close to it. It seems only two or three people can ride it, and it doesn't like me that much. Turkmens have a good income through raising horses. There are 30 clubs and over 2,400 horses in Gombak Kavus. If each horse is valued at $40,000 only in the region of Turkmens, I mean northeast of Iran, the horses are worth $96,000. About noon that day, it was a Friday, we had the road to see another part of the city as well. I mean the Grand Mosque in Gombad. On our way to the Grand Mosque, I saw Sunni Turkmens who had put on their best clothes to join a spiritual gathering. The majority of the people in the city are Hanafi Sunnis. The Friday prayers in here, like other parts of Iran, are held very passionately. The prayers and the sermons by the Friday prayers leaders and the speeches by the guests were very interesting and effective. I said my prayers along with my Sunni brothers, alongside each other and facing towards the same Qibla. In northeastern Iran, a tribe lives that's known as Turkmen. They earn a living through hunting and raising cattle. Turkmen, women, and men are skillful horseback riders as well, who flaunt their skills with the purebred Turkmen horses on the green plains like the wind. These sentences are descriptions about the Turkmens in Iran, men and women who are fast horseback riders. This place is Gombad Kavus's horse racing track, a place that houses many horseback riders from all across the country and gathers everyone together. Like many big stadiums in the world, this place generates a lot of revenue. From the vendors to the horseback riders and the owners of the horses and the lucrative market of betting, the excitement in this place is indescribable. Women, men, young and old, get together in this place for their passions for the horses they somehow consider as theirs and hope their horses cross the finish line first. Up north, down south, back east, and out west of Iran are brimming with different cultures and traditions. The cultures that might be very different from each other, but they managed to live together for hundreds of years. Before packing up and moving towards Gombak Kavus, I was really worried. I was worried how I was going to come to terms with a completely different culture, or how a different culture could come to terms with a stranger like me. But after living with the Turkmens for 10 days, I managed to find many differences that did not exist between us. There's not much difference between me as a Shia who lives in Tehran and a Sunni person who lives in Gombak Kavus. We're both Muslims and pray facing towards the same Qibla. and we're both living in Iran, in a country like everywhere else in the world. The person who respects other people's beliefs achieves success and makes efforts to attain their goal. As a prominent Iranian poet, Saadi, says, "If you don't tolerate my pain, you won't get any treasure. He who worked got the wage."
In the limelight.
Since Russia started a special operation in Ukraine in order to prevent NATO's eastward expansion, the United States and European countries have sent huge amounts of weapons and ammunition to Ukraine. Russia, which has announced that one of its goals of this operation is to save the people of eastern Ukraine from repressions of the Western-oriented Ukrainian regime, has always condemned the West's military aid and says this action will only prolong the war. We have taken a look at some of the world media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. Germany's Der Spiegel has more for us. Germany's Defense Minister Alexei Reznikov confirmed the first unit of the country's cutting-edge Iris-T air defense system has arrived in Ukraine. Reznikov wrote on Twitter on Wednesday, 12th of October, "A new era of air defense has begun in Ukraine. Iris-Ts from Germany are already here." The German defense minister noted that Kiev needs more weapons of this kind, arguing that protecting the sky over Ukraine against attacks by Russia is a moral imperative. Several hours later, Germany's defense ministry posted a tweet of its own, stressing that Berlin had kept its word and announced that the first Iris-T SLM air defense system has arrived in Ukraine. In a follow-up message, ministry officials quoted their boss, Christine Lambrecht, as hailing the shipment as very important support to Ukraine in its fight against missile shelling. The German Chancellor Olaf Scholz made the original pledge back in June, with a shipment initially slated for November. A total of four units made up of a command vehicle, a radar vehicle, and a truck-mounted launcher are scheduled to arrive in Ukraine sometime in 2023. According to media reports, Kiev requested at least a dozen of these ultra-modern air defense systems and offered to purchase them directly from the manufacturer, Diehl Defense of Germany. Meanwhile, Germany's own military has not received a single unit of the ground-based Iris-T system variant as of yet. This underlines concerns voiced by some German politicians and media outlets that Berlin is seriously depleting its own weapons stockpiles by supplying the hardware to Kiev. Meanwhile, Ukraine had until recently consistently lambasted Germany over its perceived unwillingness to provide heavy weaponry to Kiev. According to former Ukrainian ambassador to Germany, Andrei Melnik, when an effective range believed to be up to 40 kilometers, the air defense system is rather expensive. Speaking to Wirtschaftswoche magazine back in June, the diplomat estimated that one such unit could cost about 140 million euros, that is, $135.4 million. French broadcaster Entendeur of France 2 says, French President Emmanuel Macron stated Paris will send air defense systems, radars, missiles and weapons to Ukraine in the coming weeks to defend against missile and drone attacks. Emmanuel Macron, whose comments come after Ukraine experienced a wave of Russian missile attacks, claimed on Wednesday, 12th of October, the French supplies would specifically help defeat these kinds of threats. He added that France would deliver the hardware and the necessary training to Ukraine. Ukraine has specifically requested the weapons as a priority. The French president noted that this decision followed an unprecedented phase of bombings that struck Ukrainian cities and infrastructure. Without going into detail, Emmanuel Macron said France was providing military intelligence to Ukraine. He claimed Russia is profoundly destabilized in its capacity to regenerate its arms, its production and industry. Emmanuel Macron also declared, "We are in a hybrid war," he said. "We're not just using weapons on the ground, but using weapons of information," claiming that Russia was using a wide variety of approaches to wage the conflict, including propaganda channels, paying for influence, including on social media sites, weaponizing migration, blackmail, and hunger. Questioned on nuclear risks in Ukraine, the French President Emmanuel Macron confirmed that France's nuclear doctrine would not automatically commit to a retaliatory strike if Russia used nuclear weapons in Ukraine. The French president also refused to brand Russia a terrorist state, saying that such labels have little consequences. Macron claimed, "There's one state that's declared war, and that's more than enough."